Rayford couldn't quit talking as he rushed up the causeway back toward his home. Irene thought she would miss Indonesia, and of course she misses many people, but she has so quickly found a home helping with Kat, which she just loves. Now to have to tell her that we have a new assignment. Closer to home than Indonesia, anyway, Chaim said. Well, that's true. But then when I tell her that our heroes of the faith will be coming to share with the kids their own stories in person, well, she'll want to be here for that, and... Rayford, Chaim said, slow down. I am not 150 anymore. And could one of us get a word in? We were silent long enough in the presence of the prince. Yeah, Rayford said, sorry. Could you believe that? An audience with King David himself? We were there, partner, Max said.
Now just stop a minute and take a breath.
We're gonna scoot a mile past our valley and have to backtrack. At the end of the day, Kenny found it hard to concentrate on what Raimi wanted. He had called the Millennium Force together at one end of the property, and all Kenny wanted was to report to his mother his enthusiasm for the new recruit. Zaki actually asked whether he should bring Kasim.
Are you serious? Raimi said. He's who we're discussing.
We're going to vote then? Because you know what I'll say. He's ready. He's perfect for the assignment. Raimi held up a hand. Zaki, let's use a little discernment here, and remember that you and I were the only ones among us who chatted with him.
I know, but Bahira and Kenny trust us, don't they?
We liked him. I mean, if there are more formalities, let's get him in here so everybody can be as sold on him as we are, and...
I'm not sold on him, Zaki, Raimi said.
Neither am I, his sister said. You weren't even here, Bahira.
I wish I had been. Then we could vote, and it would be 2-1 against.
What was your concern, Raimi?
Everything. He's young, immature. He doesn't look right, doesn't comport himself appropriately. He talks too fast and too much, and frankly, I don't like what he has to say. He didn't do himself any good talking about his own conversion. He used all the right words, but they seemed just rote to him. And he didn't do himself any favors trying to summarize his own ministry. I don't think he's led one child to Christ in all the time he's been here.
To be fair, Kenny said, still wishing they could wrap this up so he could make sure his mother hired Yekaterina, he has been confined to the recreational division.
Even rec counselors lead kids to the Lord occasionally, Bahira said. You'd almost have to work at it not to.
Zaki sat shaking his head.
You're going to blackball this guy. I can't believe it. How am I going to tell him?
You shouldn't have invited him in the first place, Bahira said. Then you wouldn't have to tell him anything. You should have just suggested we get to know him and check him out without suggesting or implying anything. If he's disappointed or offended, it's only because you overpromised.
Okay, I'm sorry if I thought he would be perfect for us. Guess he can call off his trip.
Kenny stole a glance at Raimi.
What are you talking about? Raimi said. He's going to France in a few days, determined to infiltrate and bring us a report. Don't you want that?
He won't be going under our auspices, Raimi said, and you'd better be sure he says nothing about us. Kenny has made some inroads with the Jospin brothers, and we have to be careful not to compromise that.
Zaki looked embarrassed.
What? His sister said.
I know you. Tell me you didn't mention the Jospins to Kasim.
Well, I didn't know. Who else was he supposed to try to observe there? If he's not looking for someone, how would he even get in?
Stop him, Raimi said. He mustn't go. If he's determined to infiltrate some tall cell, there are plenty of others.
You want to brief him first? Zaki said. Make sure he doesn't give us away?
No.
I want him not to even think he's going on our behalf, because he's not.
Zaki sighed.
He's not going to be happy.
That makes two of us, Bahira said. Kenny's mother was preparing to leave when he finally reached her. I need to hurry, she said. You're invited to your grandfather's to hear of his audience with King David today. What? If you don't know about it, you may be the only one. Grandma wasn't supposed to say anything, but, well, it's getting around. Can you come? Wouldn't miss it. But I need to give you my impression of Miss Risto. No, you don't. I'm sorry. I hired her, his mother said. Just like that? Yes. Is there a problem? We all loved her. So my interview with her was just a formality? Chloe laughed. Your interview? You think I couldn't see how you two connected? Your report was a foregone conclusion. Then I can expect her tomorrow? Oh, she'll be here. But you shouldn't expect her. She's been assigned to recreation. You're not serious. Of course I am. Admit it, Kenny. She'd be a distraction for you. Don't worry. She'll still be in the vicinity. You can get to know her if you wish. Now come on. Your grandparents are waiting. Chapter 11. In his past, Rayford would have said he couldn't believe his luck, but this was more than fortune. This assignment proved he was continually blessed by God. His leadership skills had been tapped and his muscles stretched by the decades he'd spent leading a development team in Indonesia. And now it became his charge not only to rebuild and develop Egypt, but to lead the spiritual effort as well. This was not his strength, of course, certainly not his specialty. But he could not have done better selecting the team if it had been left to him alone. Admittedly, he would have wanted Chloe and Cameron on board, even Raimi and Kenny, but that would have crippled the COT effort. Rayford hadn't worked with Bruce since just after the rapture 100 years before, but he knew him to be an excellent preacher and student of the Bible. And who better to teach and mentor Bruce than Zion Ben-Judah and Chaim Rosenzweig? Bruce's wife, who had been raptured, had a gift for organization like Irene's. They would be of tremendous help to Mac, who would be in charge of technology, transportation, and logistics. It was clear to Rayford that Irene had mixed emotions about the move and the new mission. She loved the kids of COT, and especially getting to work alongside her immediate family. But I am happiest in the service of Christ and will go wherever he sends me. As for Rayford, he couldn't move fast enough. He was eager to hear of Abdullah's assignment and would miss working with him, but the idea of seeing the ravages left on a nation from which the Lord had removed his hand, and then having the resources to bring it back to productivity under his authority, made Rayford feel 100 again. Abdullah came by to help with packing. He explained that he soon had to get back to help Yasmin with their own. I suppose you know we're headed back to Amman. That will seem very strange. I cannot imagine how it must have changed in a century. Somehow I think that despite the passage of time, painful memories will be dredged up. I pray the Lord will use them to show you how far he has brought you. Even though I will miss all the children and, of course, Bahira and Zaki, I like the idea of my new role. Tell me about it. The Lord appeared to me in the night, apparently just before he deposited Mac and your former pastor, Bruce, right, on your doorstep. He told me sin was spreading, encroaching on my own homeland, and that he knew I would want to play a part in thwarting it. Rayford, I would have dug ditches if that's what he had asked. When the Creator God visits you, you tend to want to do what he says. One of my questions was whether I could take my family along. It has been so strange to work with Yasmin as a sister rather than a wife. And to have my children, it is bizarre to call them that at their ages, as colleagues rather than as dependents, well, that has been a joy. Alas, the children are to stay here and work with Chloe and Cameron. But Yasmin was free to choose. Really? It seems that would be a difficult decision for a wife of sorts and a mother. Plus, like most everyone involved with Kat, she seems to love it here. She did not make her decision lightly. As she has always done, she sought the Lord. Within days, she told me that she and he had come to an agreement. It was all I could do to stifle a laugh. It was as if they had been negotiating. I wouldn't dare negotiate with him. But she has been to his father's house and has a glorified mind as well as body, and so I expect they are on different speaking terms than he and I. Anyway, they apparently agreed that I need looking after. And he told her before he told me that my assignment would be dangerous. I suppose he worries that I have grown soft since the tribulation. Haven't you? Abdullah laughed. From flying you Trib Force crazies all over the planet for 7 years to working at a children's day camp, they seem equally demanding to me. Dangerous, eh? Rayford said. Surely the Lord doesn't expect a man your age to pose as a member of Tall. Captain Steele, Abdullah said solemnly, laughter dancing in his eyes. I recall the days when a comment like that to a person of ethnicity was punishable as a hate crime. Within a few days, Mac had flown everyone and their belongings about 270 miles west to the city of Al-Jiza, south of Cairo, where the Lord had directed Rayford to a tract of land on which he was to build living quarters for the team. "You should have asked David to hit up Noah for the Ark blueprints," Chaim said as he watched the younger men do most of the work. In truth, much of it fell to Rayford and Mac as the other three met during the day and evening, studying and planning their ministry attack. As soon as they had landed in Al-Jiza, it became clear the area was wounded. Since the Feast of Tabernacles in Israel several days before, no rain had fallen in the entire nation of Egypt. Worse, it was obvious that God had shut off even the underground springs, deadly to a desert climate. Rivers had stopped flowing and rapidly evaporating water lay stagnant everywhere. Citizens filled containers as fast as they could, trying to collect the last of the good water. Kenny Williams had begun looking for Yekaterina Risto after work every afternoon. They often sat together in the staff debriefing sessions. Today she was beaming, and when it came time for workers and volunteers to tell of anything interesting that had happened that day, Yekaterina was the first on her feet. "Kat Risto," she said. "I know a lot of you, but for you others, obviously, I'm new here. I've been working in rec, and at first I was afraid I wouldn't get a chance to do as much ministry as you guys who teach or lead worship. But today I told the story of Jonah, and a little girl, she said she was 10, asked me to pray with her for salvation." The staff erupted in applause, but Kat wasn't finished. "It was the sweetest thing. When she prayed, she told Jesus that, like Jonah, she had been running from him. She said, 'I kept trying to give myself to you, but I would borrow myself back. Now I want to be yours for good.'" Later, as Kenny walked her home, Yekaterina said, "I had no idea how thrilling and rewarding this was going to be. In Greece, we worked with the kids where we worshipped. We knew they were the only ones who still had to make decisions. But we pretty much left that responsibility in the laps of their parents, forgetting, I guess, how kids look up to their teachers. Often they'll listen more to us than to Mom or Dad. In all the years I worked with kids, I never prayed with one to become a believer. That was a huge failure, and I didn't even know it. Someday I need to take this cot idea back home.
I think it would work anywhere, Kenny said. I'm surprised there aren't more ministries like it around the world.
A neighbor man about Rayford's age wandered over to the Al-Jiza construction site one afternoon.
You the ones the Lord sent? He said.
That would be us, sir.
Can you do anything about getting him to turn the water back on?
That's why we're here, but as you can imagine, the leadership of this nation is going to have to get in line.
I hope you're not expecting a warm welcome in Cairo. Those young men who talked the other leaders out of going to the feast are dead, slain by lightning in the very presence of their colleagues.
Rayford stretched. The Lord's justice is swift, friend. He clearly made an example of those two, as his word warned. When their ends came, there could have been no question why, and I believe we'll be seen as the messengers we are. We're praying the whole ordeal will give us a hearing among the young people here, show them there's no trifling with God.
Well, know that every other believer is praying the same thing. Why must we suffer for the actions of a few?
The Millennium Force met in a semi-private back room at the Valley Bistro, just south of the Valley of Jehoshaphat.
So we're still looking for a natural to try to infiltrate the other light? Bahira said.
Raimi nodded, but no surprise, Zaki jumped in.
Kasim's already done it, and he has a report for us.
Zaki, we've been over this, Raimi said. He's probably already given us away.
No, and he's prepared to debrief us. Trust me, there's stuff you're going to want to hear.
I'll let you know.
He's probably outside by now, waiting for me to bring him in.
You told him where we were meeting?
Well, yeah. It was no secret, was it?
Zaki, if we're going to do this, be this force, we don't want a lot of people knowing about it. I'm not afraid of the young people of the other light because they can't hurt us, but they can sure hurt a lot of other people, so we have to stay under the radar.
Fine, but can I bring him in?
Raimi looked to Bahira, who rolled her eyes and shook her head.
I guess there's no harm in hearing what he has to say, Raimi said.
That was clearly all Zaki needed to hear. He rushed out and returned seconds later with Kasim, who pulled out a notebook and appeared to be waiting for his cue.
Before you start, Raimi said, I need to be clear. You realize you're not part of this group, and you don't work under our auspices.
Granted. But it's in your best interest to know what the competition is up to, wouldn't you say? And they're up to a lot. Those so-called nightclubs of theirs, at least the one in Paris, are so underground hardly anybody even knows about them.
Well, that makes sense, Kenny said. No matter what they're doing in there, they're breaking every law on the books, and if they flaunted it, they'd be in deep trouble.
Rumors say they have these dances and orgies and do a bunch of drugs, but unless they were just putting on a show for me, none of that was going on. They just meet there and talk and scheme and plan.
How do you get in? Kenny said. Kasim looked self-conscious.
I said I was a friend of Ignace and Lothair Jospin. The younger one, the redhead, met me at a prearranged spot. He was pretty circumspect, I have to say, wanting to know who I knew and how I knew you.
You meaning me, right? Kenny said.
Of course.
Brilliant. How hard do you think it'll be for them to find out I'm a believer working in a ministry?
I covered all that.
Do I want to hear this?
Sure, I was good. I told him you were a subversive infiltrating the enemy. Little did he know that that's really what I was doing.
Raimi feared Kasim would come off to tall the way he appeared here, totally amateurish. He sighed.
So what did you learn?
Well, for one thing, these people are serious.
Come on, Bahira said. That goes without saying. They're in the minuscule minority. What they're doing violates the law of Almighty God, and they know it.
some of their people have died, and while they revere Satan...
They like to say Lucifer. They say Satan is a pejorative label the believers gave to a poor guy who got a raw deal.
Regardless, while they revere him, he's powerless and can't even be planting these ideas in their heads. These people are totally making this stuff up as they go along, and it's entirely in the flesh. They've been seduced by the world and by their own pride. They can't even blame it on the devil.
That doesn't make them any less passionate, Bahira, Kasim said.
They trust me, though. I know that.
How do you know?
They gave me a copy of their If It's True manifesto.
Really? Kenny said.
They haven't even sent me one.
That's because they don't trust you yet. But I won them over. They'll be sending you one.
You see why we needed another guy? Zaki said. I told you Kasim could pull this off.
Bahira scowled. Don't be so sure. For one thing, he's not working for us. And for all we know, all he's done is expose us.
Well, you're wrong, Kasim said. But thanks for the gratitude. Now, you want to see this manifesto or not?
Chapter 12. Without so much as a call or an official invitation, Rayford Steele's small band entered the Egyptian Parliament building that had been rebuilt in Cairo during the first year of the Millennial Kingdom. Whatever had been going on, the entire place fell mute, and all heads turned to watch the men approach the dais. The man presiding immediately said, "We've been expecting you," and several members of the government stood to applaud. Others glared at them until the ovation petered out. Zion strode to the microphone, with the others forming a half-circle behind him.
"Excuse me," he said as the presiding official moved away and took his seat.
"Micah!"
someone shouted, and it seemed to Rayford that many who began clapping again recognized Chaim, the famed leader of the Jewish remnant at Petra during the Great Tribulation, standing behind Zion. But again the applause was short-lived. Rayford had seen Zion ben Judah in countless situations, but never had he seen him carry himself with such authority and, clearly, anger.
"On your knees!" he shouted,
and immediately the assembled slid from their chairs to the floor.
"Woe to you," says the Lord God of Israel, "for helping to scatter his people throughout the generations. He healed your land and reestablished you, populating you solely with believers until your offspring were born. Yet you kept the name of your nation a stench in the nostrils of God. Egypt, temple of the soul of Ptah, indeed. Ptah, a pagan deity from generations past. Where is he in your time of need? You deigned to rebuild this structure after the global earthquake, somehow believing God would be pleased by an edifice that looks nothing like a temple dedicated to him, but rather harks back to your days worshipping patron deities. Still, all he required of you was to observe the sacrifices and feasts, and you thumbed your noses at him. Is it any wonder he has cursed your land? Where was your backbone, your leadership, when unbelievers persuaded you to commit the affront of absenting yourself from the Feast of Tabernacles?"
A man, looking not much younger than Kenny, stood.
"Sir, if I may argue our side of the issue, your side, you are accursed. Or are you a believer, confident you shall live past your 100th birthday?"
"It merely happens that I respectfully disagree."
"Respectfully? You are fortunate to remain on this earth, for God willed that your compatriots become examples for the rest of this nation."
"But, sir, that is precisely our point. What kind of a loving God is so capricious that he would..."
"Demolish this building!" Zion roared.
Rebuild it as a temple to the Lord. Delight in his ways. Seek his face. Follow his statutes. Never again disobey his commands. And henceforth, this land shall be known as Osaze, loved by God. Lest you fear that his wrath evidences something other than his love, imagine what he could have done in the face of this ultimate insult. Now we, his servants, shall travel throughout Osaze, teaching the whole counsel of God to the wicked and the undecided and the unbelieving. Woe to anyone who attempts to hamper this effort. While the Lord has not told us when he will restore the life-giving waters, he hereby confirms his immediate judgment of sin. There shall be no more even temporary tolerance of disbelief. Those who choose their own way will continue to perish by their 100th birthdays, and anyone who dares blaspheme before that shall immediately surely die. As Rayford followed Sion and the others out, the entire auditorium was filled with weeping and men and women pleading for forgiveness and mercy. Raimi was intrigued as Kasim pulled the document from his robe. The others huddled close to read over one another's shoulders. It read, "To the thinking members of the Global Society, use your brains. You are capable of rational thought. We of the Other Light acknowledge that everyone who entered this period of history was a believer in God, either surviving the last 7 years on Earth as they knew it, or returning from heaven with him. We do not deny that God was the Creator and that Jesus is his Son. We deny that he ever came to Earth in the flesh or that he died and was resurrected. We aver that he unfairly treated one of his own creations, an angel, and summarily cast him out of his presence, forever besmirching his name and reputation. Worse, he has left men and women no choice but to believe in him and serve him, denying our free will. We have no quarrel with those who believe and follow him and consider themselves devout. We simply insist on the right to decide for ourselves. And now we come to the crux of our manifesto. If it's true that we, as his opponents, are not allowed to live past the age of 100, this merely proves our point. He will not countenance an alternate point of view. Critics and even some of our most loyal members have suggested that if it's true, we should have abandoned our ill-fated cause when the first wave of deaths hit. We, however, insist on our right to rebel, even in the face of seemingly insurmountable odds. Because of the new world, the population is exploding as never before. Literally, billions more souls will be born with every generation, and therein lies our hope. Even if it's true, our progeny, properly informed and coached, will, by the end of the millennium, amass an innumerable force. God's own prophecies indicate this. Even if it's true that we will continue to die out every 100 years, if we remain committed to our cause against the vengeful, bloodthirsty God of the Old Testament, we have hope. If we can equip the eventual mega-army of dissidents to where they can actually emerge victorious in the end, perhaps the new ruler will resurrect us and allow us to reign with him. The biggest mistake God makes will be to loose our leader for a season at the end of this millennium, for that shall truly signal the end of his kingdom. Let us not be deterred by intermittent defeats. Watch our ranks grow with every generation, and we will in the end prove that God is anything but gracious and loving and forgiving. Our hope and wish and instruction to the future torchbearers of the Other Light is that they continue to add to and refine this manifesto until, by the last generation, it becomes the most motivational and strategic call to arms the world has ever known. And be encouraged.
Even if it's true that we die out every generation, it stands to reason that our progeny will become more numerous each time, and if that's true, it should be exponentially encouraging to each new wave that carries on our message. So, what if it's true? Add to this document. Refine it, improve it, pass it on, and we'll see you on the victory stand in the end. The Other Light. Abdullah Ababne had not been in Amman an hour before he was engaged by a neighbor curious to know what he thought of the most recent judgment from God.
"I did not know we even had people of the other light within our borders," the neighbor said. "But God exterminated one this morning."
"Tall is spreading quickly," Abdullah said, unwilling, of course, to reveal that he was in Jordan for the express purpose of infiltrating them. "Tell me what happened."
"If possible," the man said, "there is a faction within Tall that is even more radical than their mainstream. They believe that if they can somehow impregnate women with glorified bodies, they can create a super-mongrel race of potential converts to their side who would be partially glorified and perhaps able to live past 100. Imagine if they're right."
"They are wrong," Abdullah said. "Simply wrong."
"How can you say that? It only stands to reason, friend. Why do you think that among the glorified there's no marrying or giving in marriage? The glorified bodies of women must have no childbearing capabilities because they're not even interested in reproductive activity."
"You may be right, and I hope you are, but that didn't stop a taller from attempting to rape a glorified woman this morning."
"And?"
"Her story is that she fought him off, but he subdued her. However, before he could proceed, he died in her arms. When she reported it to authorities, they found his ashes in her bedroom."
"He had been struck by lightning, and she was not affected?"
"She may have been immune anyway because of the nature of her body, but her account is that he merely died. The incineration had to have happened while she was running for help."
"But her dwelling was not damaged? Not even the blanket on her bed? It reminds me of those strange stories from the past. Spontaneous combustion."
"We must spread this story far and wide," Abdullah said. "Does anyone know how old the perpetrator was? The younger the better, for it will convince these people that such acts will cost them even the few years they have."
"DNA tests identified him as a local 86-year-old.
"Perfect," Abdullah said. "I grieve for anyone lost in their sin, but this will be a lesson for others." That evening, Abdullah and Yasmin strolled familiar streets.
"How I wish," she said, "that we had been friends like this when we were husband and wife."
"I'm sorry."
"We're way past regrets, Abdullah. I rejoice that you became a believer, and the past must remain the past. We share a blessing not everyone can claim. Children who follow the Lord and serve him."
"Mm-hmm.
Are you listening to me, Abdullah?"
"Hmm? Sure. Sorry."
"You're distracted. About what?"
"I need to find Zeke. Mr. Zuckermandel? You've told me of him. The one who was so helpful with disguises for the Trib Force? He's going to have to work some magic. How am I, a natural, supposed to look younger than 100? Maybe we missed God's instruction. Perhaps it's you who are to infiltrate the other light. You don't look a day over 95.
Kenny visited Yekaterina that evening, hoping to muster the courage to tell her how affectionate he had become toward her. He could never quite seem to find the words, and she kept changing the subject.
She moved from exulting anew over what had happened with the little girl that day to asking how well he knew the Jordanian.
You know, the one who's been working at Kot for years but was gone the last several days.
Kasim?
That's it. Where's he been?
I understand he was visiting France.
Whatever for? Does he have people there?
Kenny shrugged, feeling guilty about being evasive, but also knowing that it was too early in their relationship. In fact, it wasn't even a friendship yet. Merely an acquaintance, for him to be telling Yekaterina anything about the Millennium Force or Kasim and his self-motivated infiltrations of the Other Light. And then it hit him. Yekaterina would be the perfect infiltrator. The right age, the right gender, no baggage. And she was a ton more mature than Kasim. She could do whatever the Millennium Force needed, and she would know how to keep confidences. Ah, what was he thinking? He barely knew her and wanted to be more than friends, and he was already thinking of recruiting her for a clandestine operation with a force she wasn't even aware of. What was wrong with him? Chapter 13.
You look wonderful for your age, Abdullah,
Yasmin said.
But if I may be frank, not even your friend Zeke.
I know, Abdullah said. He's a miracle worker. But how do you camouflage the aging of more than a century? Imagine what I would have looked like had I lived this long before the millennium.
That made Yasmin laugh, but she quickly covered her mouth when Abdullah feigned offense.
What would Zeke do with you? And what would be the plan if you were made to look like a young person?
Abdullah shrugged.
This was the Lord's idea. He's going to have to tell me what to do.
The Lord really is a miracle worker, of course. But those young people will know if it's obvious you've survived your 100th birthday that you're an interloper. And while I don't worry that they can do you harm when you belong to Jesus, even finding you out couldn't be good for our cause. Anyway, Yekaterina said, I think he likes me.
Pardon?
Kasim, the Jord...
I know who you're talking about. Why do you think he likes you? Has he said so? Have you spent any time together?
Not really. We were in charge of relays the other day, and he asked me all about my background. Then he started teasing me. It seemed like flirting, and while I wasn't rude, I didn't engage him in the banter. Later, he told me he would like to see me.
See you? As in go out with you?
She nodded.
And I agreed.
What? Tell me you didn't.
Kenny, what's the matter? I didn't want to be rude. He just wants to take me to dinner Friday night.
What can be the harm? You know him better than I.
Is there some reason I shouldn't accept an invitation from a brother?
A brother?
Kenny wasn't so sure. Raimi was suspicious of Kasim, and his personality grated on Kenny. But that wasn't enough to make him badmouth the guy to Yekaterina. Kenny knew full well why he had a problem with Kasim's interest in Kat. He had merely beaten Kenny to the punch.
Well, she said, no warnings? No dire stories?
Kenny shook his head. He wanted to blurt out that he cared for her and would rather date her himself, but it was too late. He had missed his window of opportunity. He would look jealous and desperate. Would he have to compete with Kasim to see her at all now? 3 days later, on Friday afternoon, Cameron and Chloe had just bidden farewell to the last straggler at Kot and were sitting down to a heaping bowl of fresh fruit when the priest Yerrick appeared at their back door. As he began to introduce himself, Cameron said, "We know who you are, sir. May we offer you anything?"
"Thank you, no," Yerrick said. "I come bearing news. You know of the arrangement between your father-in-law and King David regarding the men
of the Bible who are to come, yes.
I am here to inform you that if you can avail some time tomorrow, Noah is prepared to be here.
Oh, certainly. Of course, we had hoped for more notice so we could let our people know and ensure the largest crowd possible, and we'd also like to prepare the children by reminding them of his story.
Yerrick smiled. The children don't know his story?
Well, sure, but just so you're aware, he'll be here alone. He will require nothing. No food, no drink, no introduction. And while there may be no way to preclude this, neither is he comfortable with praise. No doubt the children will want to cheer him, but there's no need to encourage it. And as for drawing a large crowd, allow me to ask you, sir, have you already thought of whom you might inform as soon as I leave?
Chloe laughed. I don't know about Cam, but I have. Starting with our staff, of course.
Then I dare say, Yerrick said, that news will spread quickly. There will not likely be a family associated with your ministry who will not be aware of tomorrow's visitor, and you should probably plan for a crowd that extends beyond your ministry families as well.
Sir,
your families will tell their friends, and people will arrive who have no children in Kot.
News of the new name of Egypt spread quickly through that nation, and as Rayford, Irene, Chaim, Zion, Mac, Bruce, and his wife visited the various cities, the people would cry out, "Long live Osaze, loved by God, and long live our King, the Lord Christ." But after one of the team preached and young people under 100 streamed forward to commit their lives to Christ, someone was always bound to demand to know when God would lift his curse.
"That is up to you," Bruce Otzion would boom. "We believe the Lord is waiting to bless repentant hearts and minds and spirits."
"But we have seen our sin and confessed," the people would yell, "and ours was a sin of omission. We allowed others to sway us, but we didn't choose to oppose the Lord."
Rayford's team never left an area without constructing, developing, advising, counseling, and even initiating technological advances. But even Rayford himself wondered how long it would be before God lifted his hand of discipline from the land. It was all Kenny could do to contain himself Friday evening, knowing that Kasim was at dinner with Yekaterina. He had got Kat to agree to come and see him later to tell him everything, and she had chuckled that it would be like telling everything to a girlfriend. "But of course you're not a girl at all. I didn't mean to imply that. But we're chums, aren't we? I should be able to tell a friend everything, especially about a date, shouldn't I?" All Kenny could do was nod. He'd rather not know her, or even be her enemy than be her chum, but he would take what he could get. He had to talk himself out of praying that Kasim would make a bad impression on her.
"You're not really going to go down that road, are you, Kenneth?" the Lord said.
"No, Lord."
"Albania?"
Yasmin said.
"What is Zeke doing there?"
"A little of everything, I guess," Abdullah said. "Farming and teaching young people."
"I can't imagine he's still in the forgery and disguise business."
"I plan to find out. Will you fly with me?"
"Tonight?"
"Right now."
"How far is it?"
1,000 miles or so, maybe 1,100, an hour's flight.
It was very late, but Kenny knew Kat wouldn't forget to call. He wouldn't sleep until he heard from her, but when his implanted cell phone sounded, it was Raimi.
"You sound disappointed," Raimi said.
"No, sorry. Just had my mind elsewhere."
"Well, it's good to know you weren't thinking about me," Raimi said, laughing.
"Listen, I just got the strangest call from my sister, and she wanted me to call a few people for her. You're one of them."
"I'm listening."
"You'll never guess who's coming to speak to the kids tomorrow." Kenny decided Raimi had been right. He wouldn't have guessed Noah in a million years.
Much as he wanted a full rundown of the evening from Kat, now he had something even more dramatic to share with her. "Needless to say," he told Raimi, "I'll be there." "Somehow I guessed that. You'll want to be early. I have a feeling the place will be overrun." To Abdullah, it appeared that Gustav Zuckermandel Jr. hadn't changed in 100 years. He was still large and baby-faced, though he did seem to have a smile that wouldn't quit. The big man greeted Yasmin with a bear hug.
"I heard all about you, ma'am," he said.
"I sure did.
Tell you what, I'd have been your husband, you'd have changed my mind."
As soon as he said it, he appeared to realize how it sounded, blushed, and apologized.
"I just meant, you know, never mind."
Abdullah and Yasmin had entered Zeke's humble dwelling and found him listening to music at the end of what he said was, "Yet another long, satisfying day.
I haven't said anything different about a day for a century, but this is going to be one to remember with you guys here."
It turned out that Zeke was primarily farming, but he had started a ministry he called For the Undecided. He advertised to anyone honestly still seeking answers about the Lord. "If you're a genuine seeker, let's talk." He said he had led probably thousands to Christ, mostly people in their 70s and 80s. They all have the same story, pretty much. Raised by believers, of course. They just have a lot of questions and worry that they're just inheriting their parents' faith. I get a few scoffers or even potential tallers, but I just tell them up front, "If you're not open and honest about your search, you're probably talking to the wrong guy. I'm not here to argue and fight or defend the Lord. He sure doesn't need that, especially from me. These young people sure like to hear tribulation stories, though, and I've got a million of them, as you know." When Abdullah told Zeke of his assignment from the Lord, the younger man recoiled.
"Sorry, man, but nobody in Tall is going to believe you're under 100.
"That's why I'm here. You're to the best."
"Yeah, but I'm no plastic surgeon, man."
"Hey, sorry, I don't mean to be rude. I mean, for one thing, I haven't been in the craft for decades. With technology the way it is now, I could make you a killer new ID, but it's only as good as the disguise, and unless you were wearing a mask, I mean, come on. Now, don't look at me that way, Smitty. You know I'd do it if I could. I'm not trying to be a wise guy, but you ought to tell the Lord that if he really wants you playing a young guy, he's going to have to work a miracle. Now, Yasmin here, you don't mind if I use your first name, do you, ma'am?"
"Not at all."
"I could make her look 80, maybe even 70. She doesn't look older than 25 or so in the kind of years we used to live. Making up a glorified face would be a trick, though, and I don't think I'd want to even try it. Seems sacrilegious, you know. But then, that's not what you're asking."
"Don't think I haven't thought of checking to be sure I wasn't getting her assignment," Abdullah said. "I just thought you might have an idea, other than reminding me how ancient I look. You know I didn't mean anything by it. I'm teasing you, friend. I don't know what I was hoping for. If the best I get is reconnecting with you, it was worth the trip." "You gotta promise me something, though, Smitty. You've gotta tell me what comes of all this. God must have something in mind, and if he does, it's gonna be special." It was well after midnight when Kat called Kenny, suggesting it was too late to visit.
"Are you kidding? I've been waiting. I need to hear everything."
"You are just like a girlfriend," she said, obviously delighted. But she must have been able to tell from his silence that that was the last thing he wanted to hear.
"Oops," she said. "Sorry." "Just come over," he said, "unless you don't want to." "I want to."
Before retiring to their respective chambers, Chloe said, "Cam, I'm wondering whether the Lord has let Dad know that his request is going to be honored starting tomorrow. I know he'd want to be here."
"Ask him."
"Really? You think I should?"
"Of course. Find out if he knows, and if he doesn't, tell him. And invite him."
But he's got such important work going there in Egypt.
Osaze.
My mistake.
Still, Chloe, if I were him, I'd at least want to be given the option. You know, your mom would want to be here.
Here's hoping their, boss gives them some time off.
Chapter 14.
I found Kasim hilarious, Yekaterina reported, plopping herself on Kenny's couch and declining his offer of grapes. I'm stuffed. He took me to the Valley Bistro, where you had your meeting.
Our meeting?
Your Millennium Force meeting. Anyway, it was great. Did you just love it? I did. And Kasim was chivalrous, full of stories, talked a mile a minute. In fact, I feel like I've just now caught that from him. Have I? Am I just talking incessantly? Stop me if I am. I don't mean to be. He wants to see me again. I probably will let him, but I didn't promise.
Kenny's mind was whirling. He liked the quiet and shy cat better, and he hated that she seemed so intrigued by Kasim. But her knowing about the Millennium Force troubled him most.
The Millennium Force? Yes, don't play dumb, Kenny. I'm surprised you hadn't told me about it, all clandestine and skullduggery. He told me how you're pretending to be a taller, telling them that you're working undercover at COT, playing both ends against the middle. It sounds so exciting. And Kasim infiltrating in Paris? Wow!
Kenny looked away and popped three grapes into his mouth, tucking them into his cheek.
So, he didn't leave me anything to tell you? He doesn't even know we know each other. And still he told you my business? It's his business too, Kenny. He admits he's not an official member of the Millennium Force, but he's your primary outside contractor.
Contractor?
Well, not for money, but who knows what might come of it now that he's delivered the goods.
The goods?
The tall manifesto.
He didn't leave a thing out.
Don't worry, he swore me to secrecy. Hush, hush.
Yeah, that Kasim. Real tight-lipped.
He thinks I would make a good undercover infiltrator, too.
He does?
Because I look young for my age. I could tell them I'm 10 or 20 years younger and stay on the inside a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think so?
Kenny strode to the window and pulled the drapes apart, letting in the bright moonlight.
I think you're most valuable and productive right where you are. I mean, I'd rather you were working directly with me, but don't you feel as if you're where God wants you?
He heard Yekaterina lean forward.
Look at me, Kenny.
He turned.
You're upset. You're taking this way too seriously. I'm not considering anything Kasim mentioned tonight. All that stuff is just fantasy. I mean, I'm impressed that he does it, and that you and your friends are trying to figure ways to thwart Tall. But you're right. The best way to do that, at least for me, is to keep doing what I'm doing. I would rather lead one child to Christ than expose a dozen Tall cells. If their dying off doesn't convince them they're destined to lose in the end, nothing I say or you say or Kasim says is going to change their minds.
I worry that they're affecting young people, though, Kat.
Kids like you were honest seekers. Those types could be swayed.
True. So let's get kids saved early. Then these characters won't have any impact on them.
But again, Kenny, you're overreacting to this. Why so troubled?
Kenny sighed. This was Kasim's fault. He had put everything on the table, proving again that he was a loose cannon, impossible to trust, the quintessentially wrong person for the job. Kenny sat again, picking a handful of grapes from the bunch and swirling them in his palm. I need to tell you about Kasim, but I don't want you to take it the wrong way.
What would be the wrong way to take it?
I don't know. Maybe that instead of giving you a brotherly warning about a guy, I was just being jealous.
Jealous of what?
Your attention. That seemed to stop her. She looked genuinely surprised.
Don't tease me, Kenny.
Tease you?
You needn't be jealous of anyone seeming to have my attention. I've wanted your attention since the day we met.
Seriously?
I've been afraid to... I just figured you saw me as too young, too new in the faith, a little flaky because it took me so long to become a believer. I don't know, maybe you thought I was too immature, hadn't had enough real ministry experience, or maybe you just didn't think of me in, you know, those terms, attention terms.
Kenny tried to put the grapes in his mouth, but one missed and rolled down his front, bouncing off his belt buckle and rolling across the floor. Yekaterina made a move to retrieve it, which embarrassed him. He said, "I'll get it," but with his mouth full, his words sounded mushy, which made him laugh, and another grape came shooting out. Now Yekaterina was laughing, and they were on their hands and knees gathering the errant grapes. "At least let me get the one that's been in my mouth," Kenny said, and she howled all the more. Once they were both seated again, and Kenny felt the color receding from his face, Yekaterina reached for his hand. He wiped it on his pants to be sure it wasn't sticky with grape juice and extended it. No one but his parents had ever held his hand.
"Now you're going to tell me about Kasim, and then I'm going to tell you how innocently I view him regardless. And then we're going to tell each other why we're so interested in each other's attention."
"It's always good to hear from you, sweetheart," Rayford said. "How's Cam?" When Chloe finished bringing her father up to date on everything and everyone, she asked if he knew Noah was on the cot schedule the next day. "I didn't know. But isn't that just like David or the Lord or whoever arranged this? Scheduling him on the Sabbath."
"I hadn't thought of that. Maybe that's to keep the crowd down."
"Or up. If it's all right for a patriarch like that to be there, it's certainly all right for everyone else. I'd sure like to be there, and we both know your mother would. We're scheduled for Siwa tomorrow, which is more than 600 miles from you.
And we don't know when he's going to show up, Dad.
In his own time, I suppose. We'll sure be ready." "Well, we'll be thinking of you regardless." Kenny searched himself for any ill motive in telling Yekaterina his misgivings about Kasim. She fell silent and seemed to cloud over as he spoke.
"Do you wonder about him spiritually?" she said finally.
"I don't know what to think. Raimi is dubious because Kasim's conversion story is so cut and dried, and he doesn't seem to have been successful in ministering to kids at Cot, actually leading them to Christ, I mean, despite all the years he's worked there."
"I wasn't going to say anything," she said, "but now that you mention it, he never initiates conversation about the Lord. It's always about him. And when there's work to be done, I mean real work, not playing with the kids, he always seems to disappear. Carrying stuff, putting equipment away, preparing a field. You just can't find him. He always has some alibi. Like tomorrow, even. I said something innocuous about seeing him tomorrow, and he said no, he was taking the day off because some special speaker is coming and he's sure it's going to be crowded. He said there'll be enough parents to help. The staff wouldn't even have to be there."
"Special speaker? That's what he said?"
She nodded. "I'm not even sure he's right, is he? Do you know of a guest coming tomorrow?"
"You didn't hear?"
"No. He didn't tell you?"
She shook her head.
"You seriously don't know? Can you think of one more way to ask me, Kenny? Just tell me."
"He did."
"No, not the Noah."
"Do you know another?"
"Kasim had to know that, right?"
"We tried reaching everyone. I'm amazed he didn't tell you. And I'm shocked he could stay away. How could he?" The entire Rayford Steel development team was traveling in a huge motor coach currently encamped just outside Siwa in the west of what had been known for eons as Egypt. It was now Osaze, of course. Rayford had taken the call from Chloe late, making sleep impossible. He didn't want to waken the others, so he tiptoed out, slipping on his sunglasses against the moon, the light from which reminded him of noon sunshine from his former days. Rayford was strolling near the Siwa Oasis when it was as if God turned the water back on. He felt the rumble in the ground and heard the movement of the springs and even a small waterfall. "What is it, Lord?" he said. "The last holdout repented? What?" But God was silent. Rayford knew well that the Creator took his own counsel, had his own schedule and agenda and clock. If it was time, it was time, and no one else had to know or understand. "Thank you, Jesus," Rayford said. "This will certainly make our work easier. Dare I ask for the freedom to return to Israel for the day tomorrow?" The sound of the motor coach door slamming made Rayford turn. Zion approached.
"Ah,"
the professor said. "I hope that rumble meant what it did. Look at that water." Rayford told him what was happening at Kot the next day. "We're going, are we not? Surely the prince expected that when he acceded to your requests." "The Lord is not saying," Rayford said. "Should I take your interest as his blessing?"
"That's on you," Zion said. "But you can be sure the rest will want to go. How about we put out a fleece? See if Mac can get us there by the crack of dawn, and back as soon as it's over, and if he can, we'll take that as divine permission."
"Works for me," Rayford said.
"All right," Yekaterina said slowly. "I have lost my enthusiasm for the unique personality of Kasim Marid. I suppose I know what to say when he asks to take me out again. But whatever will I do with my spare time now?"
"I have some ideas," Kenny said, smiling.
"I thought you might. Would you start by walking me home? I don't want to be late to work tomorrow."
Yekaterina's parents' place was about 3/4 of a mile from Kenny's, giving them more time to chat. Kenny took her elbow as they walked. "I was struck from the first by your obvious passion for the Lord," he said.
"Me too," she said. "I mean about you."
"It's something I have to work on," he said. "How bad is that? I'm living in the millennial kingdom, with Jesus right here on the throne and ever-present, and still I struggle with the flesh."
"We're not in heaven yet. The glorified mind and body people seem to have no distractions to their devotion.
The undecideds trouble me more."
"Tell me about it, Kenny. I was one for way too long.
If it's hard for me to be as devout and consistent as I want to be with my heritage and my work, I can't imagine what it's like for those who stubbornly want to insist on their own way."
"They're easy targets for the other light," she said. "What a name for the resistance, huh? They really worship the lesser light. The way lesser light."
They fell silent as they neared Yekaterina's home. She reached up and intertwined her fingers with his.
"So, is it my turn?" she whispered at last.
"Your turn?
To tell you my first impression of you."
"That's your call."
"I found you courtly."
"That's a quaint term, and you liked that?"
"I quickly became infatuated," she said. "Is that too forward?"
"Not for me.
But I don't understand. We hardly saw each other after that first day." "That was all it took for me. I was so glad you didn't ignore me after that, even though we worked in different areas."
"Ignore you?
If you were infatuated, I don't know what to call what I was. What I am. I just know I want to spend a lot more time with you, Kat. I want to really get to know you." "Well," she said, gazing at him, "it seems we have plenty of time for that. For one thing, I'm going to be putting in for a transfer to a more direct ministry-oriented department. I mean, I like rec, and I've had my ministry opportunities, but I'd feel more comfortable now in an area that doesn't have Kasim in it.
It's unlikely my parents would put you in my area. My mother was on to us from the first day.
Oh, how embarrassing. It showed?
According to her.
Mothers know these things. But I want to learn from you how to make reaching these kids an everyday thing.
Well, Kenny said, if our relationship is going to be educational, we ought to start on the way to work tomorrow, wouldn't you say?
Just tell me when to be ready, Professor Williams.
Chapter 15. Cameron Williams was up 2 hours before anyone was expected on his property, which now covered 80 acres and was threatening to have to expand yet again. Daily, he and Chloe and Kenny and a couple hundred other staffers hosted the children at what had become known as the biggest daycare center in the world. But of course it was more than that. Besides that, the kids all seemed to revere and, yes, love him and Chloe, which he accepted gratefully from Jesus as recompense for their giving up their small family in service to him during the tribulation. Cot had become the most effective salvation ministry anyone was aware of. Cameron sang and prayed as he strolled the grounds, checking on everything from parking areas and gates to buildings and open areas. Everything seemed in order for their special visitor. Predicting within a few thousand how many might show up was another thing. Only one staffer had informed him and Chloe that he wouldn't be there, giving no reason, just asking for the day off. Who knew? Maybe he wanted to be there as a spectator. Why else would a person not want to be working today?
Lord, may this be more than a spectacle. May children come to you because your servant is here.
Cameron turned at the sound of an engine and saw a van pulling onto the property 100 yards away. As he squinted into the rising sun, he followed the cloud of dust until the vehicle skidded up next to him and the tinted driver's window lowered.
"We're looking for the circus, buddy," Mac McCullum said. "We in the right place?"
"Hush, Mac," Irene called out from a back seat. "Cam, I called Chloe on the way in, and she's already started on breakfast. She said we'd find you out here, but I've got to get back and help her. Hop in."